Shavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada summarizes these stages in this purport to verse 12, so on page 67. In summary, to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the highest goal, there are two processes. One process is by gradual development. The other process is direct. Devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the direct method. And the other method involves renouncing the fruits of one's activities. When one can... When one can come to the stage of knowledge, then one can come to the stage of knowledge, then to the stage of meditation, and then to the stage of understanding the Supersoul, and then to the stage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One may take either the step-by-step process or the direct path. The direct process is not possible for everyone. Therefore, the indirect process is also good. It is, however, to be understood that the indirect process is not recommended for Arjuna because he is already at the stage of loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. It is for others who are not at this stage. For them, the gradual process of renunciation, knowledge, meditation, and realization of the Supersoul and Brahman should be followed. But as far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, it is the direct method that is stressed. Everyone is advised to take to this direct method and surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, you see these paths, you have this quick path, the direct path, and then you have this slow path, the indirect. And so, as pointed out, is everybody can't follow the direct path because of their attachments. Their attachments are so great that they're unable to. So, therefore, if they do good work, that will naturally give knowledge. From that cultivating the knowledge, it'll bring about meditation. And from there, they can start to understand Paramatma and the Supersoul, that will bring him to the Personality of Godhead. Right? So, it's gradually, but it works. Right? So, but, and then the other is that you are engaging yourself in the Lord's service. Right? So the senses are engaged. So, either directly, you know, by that spontaneous, natural, affection or attraction, or that through a regulated form. And then in that regulation, you may have more absorbed, more detached, more connected, or slowly, slowly, less, down to where you just do good work and give some money and try to help and this and that. And slowly, slowly, if you're doing something in connection like this, you'll get to understand Krishna. Right? The person, he's giving money to the temple, but he doesn't actually understand Krishna or what's going on. But he knows it's a good work and devotees are doing something nice. So at time, by that service and by association, he'll come to understand. So it's kind of like the lowest level of this. Right? And then you have the other where you're just doing some good work, and then from that you develop this knowledge and you understand, it'll come up. So, in one sense, you can say is that the indirect path will lead to the direct path. It's just it'll take a long time. But you could take up the direct path immediately by connecting yourself to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So the Gita is talking about the direct method, because the indirect, you never know how long that one's going to take. might take you a little while. In the final verses in this chapter, the Lord again discusses pure devotional service. He describes 35 transcendental qualities possessed by his pure devotees, which make those devotees dear to him. Verses 13 through 20. The auspicious qualities developed as a result of devotional service. 13. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities. Who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego. Who is equal in both happiness and distress. Who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service. With determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. Now, because Krishna has these qualities, so someone who has those qualities, they will be able to properly interact with him. Because otherwise, how do you establish friendship? Right? How do you establish a relationship unless there's some common qualities? So Krishna works with these qualities. Right? He for whom no one is put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety is very dear to me. Right? So he's not giving trouble to anyone, and he's not being troubled by anybody. It doesn't mean, now one could say, okay, well that's if everything's perfect. But here it says, use equipoise in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety. So that doesn't mean that these don't happen. It just means they don't bother you. Right? This is sometimes, we think that, you know, religion will create this very nice, wonderful, all the time perfect situation. But remember, we're in the material world, so it doesn't happen. Right? When you're dealing with relationships and different kinds of people, then there's always going to be this element. Right? Does this make sense? So, it doesn't bother us. It comes up, we deal with it. Right? So that's how the Shastra tells how to deal with the material energy in all these various situations. Right? Because by dealing in a proper way, the technique will work. Results will come. But you shouldn't be bothered by it. Does that make sense? So here we see even on this level means that one is able to deal with the material energy, but at the same time not get involved in it. One's not attached. That's not the reason you're doing something. Because if you're not equipoised, means in happiness you're attached to that, so you're working in one way. Distress, it bothers you, so you work in a different way. Right? So it's a matter of the happiness and distress, all that is working in one particular way. Right? That you're always just seeing what's the best situation to serve Krishna and just moving that forward. So it doesn't matter if the situation is more nice or less nice. It still works. Right? My devotee, who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. Right? Okay, so we're going through all those. Then, one who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things. Such a devotee is dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge and who is engaged in devotional service. Such a person is very dear to me. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal are very, very dear. Very, very dear to me. So one who is not envious, but is a friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on Krishna. Such a devotee is very dear to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verses 13 to 14. A pure devotee is never disturbed in any circumstance, nor is he envious of anyone, nor does a devotee become his enemy's enemy. He thinks, this person is acting as my enemy due to my own past misdeeds, so it is better to suffer than to protest. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8, it is stated, Tatte nukampam, nukampam, su kamikshamano, bunjana evatma, ma kritam vipakam. Whenever a devotee is in distress or has fallen into difficulty, he thinks that it is the Lord's mercy upon him. He thinks, thanks to my past misdeeds, I should suffer far, far greater than I am suffering now. So it is by the mercy of the Supreme Lord that I am not getting all the punishment I am due. I am just getting a little by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is always calm and quiet, patient, despite many distressful conditions. A devotee is always very kind to everyone, even to his enemy. Because there is no enemy, because it's simply the action or reaction that's carried on in the universe. As things are happening, that's the way. As you perform an activity, those results come. And because of these results, then the situation is created. And so in that creation, in that situation, then it may be nice or not nice, or auspicious or inauspicious. But if one is not disturbed, then it doesn't, that one is not bothered. One is still determined to perform devotional service. Right? So in other words, one is simply, whatever the situation, seeing how to use this in the Lord's service. Right? This is what he's trying to establish here. Yes.
What if doubts come up as to if something is coming, getting in the way of one's devotional service? Actually,
we're not saying, but that's what his determination will infer, that there are obstacles. Right? If it's just going so smoothly, would we call that determination? No, determination is used as a term when there are difficulties in application. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. So then we call that determination. So it's being brought up. There's going to be auspicious, inauspicious. There's going to be happiness, distress. There's going to be fear. There's going to be anxiety. All these things are going to come because you're dealing with material energy. Right? So dealing with that, then, you see how to serve Krishna, so you're always determined. And while these come up, you don't say, well, this one's my enemy, this one's this and that. One simply sees, the proper relationships in devotional service, and those who are outside of that, then you understand that's just due to my karma.
But someone who blasphemes Krishna.
Someone who blasphemes Krishna, then you deal with that. Why wouldn't one deal with that? What would be...
Well, I'm just thinking that suffers instead of...
Yeah. State of suffering, but the point is here it's talking about your suffering.
Yeah,
if someone's blaspheming you, that's one thing. But if they're blaspheming Krishna, that's a different thing. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's improper. So then, therefore, we'll say something. Right? No. Means happiness is the attainment of something that you want. Distress is not obtaining it. Right? So then it's easy to understand what situation you're in. Because it's a state of means that state of existence has an influence on the state of the mind. And so the mind is when it's attaining what it wants, then it will manifest the qualities of happiness. But that doesn't, now you forget Krishna because now everything's perfect. Or distress, and oh, this process is not working, and things like that. It's just, if things go nice or don't go nice, then it's not that emotions aren't felt, but you're not swayed by the emotions, that you're not involved in the devotional process. That's the point. Right? So the difficulty is not all the whether the emotions are there or not there or all these different things. The problem is that people are forgetting their position. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Yes.
Actually, like the New Age philosophy is just to be able to ride with the bumps and tolerate everything.
Ride with the bumps, tolerate everything, but they only are describing certain bumps and certain tolerance. You know what I'm saying? So they won't be able to have a consistent explanation. You know what I'm saying? Because there's no question of that you're doing these things because of duty, and there's that connect, and that duty is connected to the Lord, right? You know, so say, you know, you should be tolerant, or you should, you know, see everybody, and everybody's just trying to do their own thing. So what happens if, you know, you're in your house with your family, you know, like that, and then some, you know, drug addict breaks into the house and wants to steal everything and might injure people. So you just see it in a pleasant, oh, he's just trying to, you know, find, you know, that means which is, you know, he's able to obtain what's important to him.
He's right? Expressing himself.
Yeah, he's expressing himself. Right? No, they're not going to react nicely there. They're going to be very strong with the person. You know what I'm saying? So they're just dealing in certain day-to-day things, you know, when your kids say this, your boss says that, or this or that. So which are good. It's a start. But the problem is it's not consistent because they won't actually understand the nature of, you know, themselves and God and the material energy. They won't understand action reaction. They don't understand all these things. Does that make sense?
And the ultimate conclusion is that it's all one.
It's all one, but at the same time as, you know, New Age means where are they? Right? They're at these nice, touchy-feely little New Age conferences. Why don't they, if it's all one, why don't they go to a Hell's Angels get-together? That, you know, it's all one. It's a get-together. Hey, you know. You know, go hang out on the floor on Wall Street. You know, they're all just getting together. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, it's the principle is there. It's nice. Doing good work is nice. So, in other words, they're just interested in themselves, not progressive at all. They're interested in helping others, doing nice things for others. That's good. Right, as Krishna's mentioned, that's good. It's better than that. It's more progressive. If they continue with that, then some knowledge will come, and then slowly, slowly, from their meditation, from there, then they can start to understand about Brahman and the Super Soul. But you're talking about hundreds, thousands of births here. You know, and you can either put a comma between those two or not. You know what I'm saying? You're talking about a long time. So, therefore, it's nice, but the point is as is pointed out, Arjuna already understands devotional service. So for him to go to that, that's such a drop. You understand? So when devotees take up this new age and replace Krishna consciousness with that, they drop from the direct process to the indirect. You know? So that's not really very good. You know, the guy is there working and, you know, working in the, you know, stock market, moving all these different things, making hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. And then he drops from that down to some kids, you know, playing with some, how you say, you know, gobstoppers or stuff like that. And, you know, if you do this and I get two and hey, he gets one. And, you know, so, you know, it's a whole scene going on here. And at the end of the day, you might end up with one jawbreaker, you know, like that. Or two if you're lucky, you know, you're really good at this, you know. So it's not exactly comparable. So the other is good. But the point is, you know, it's just like you have a little kid. And he's there and, you know, he's doing all these dealings with, the, you know, all the other kids in the school. So you can understand, hey, this guy's got, you know, he'll probably do I be good at some business and good at some kind like this? But, you know, once he's established in that, the world of economics, to drop back to doing what he did as a kid, that's, you understand? So all these other things are to bring one to devotional service. One has to remember all things in the world are to connect you with Krishna, to connect you with devotional service. Right? So not understanding that, dealing with them is an extremely slow process. Right? Because it's indirect. But once, if one's fortunate, then by Krishna's mercy, one comes in contact with the devotees, is able to take up the direct method. So once one takes that up, then the indirect is not recommended. You know what I'm saying? So to get involved in the New Age stuff and all that, it's, what's the point? You know what I'm saying? But if someone says preaching, says yes, it's just a language. But we have our own definitions of what's there. They just want to hear certain words. They don't know what they mean. You know, be peaceful, be nice. Are they peaceful? How are they sitting in that yoga club? Right? They flip burgers down at McDonald's. That's why they're there. Look out in the parking lot. What did they drive up in? Right? You know what I'm saying? They got money. They got position. So now they're worried about their lack of peace because their idea was, as I get all this money, I'm going to be happy. Right? Who's at the yoga studio? 18-year-olds? No, mid-30s and 40-year-olds. Why? Because when they were in their teens and early 20s, they thought, when I'm successful, you know, I go to school, I get my degree, I practice my law, my medicine, and then, you know, I'm going to be successful, then I'm going to be happy. What happened? Now they're successful. Now they're like that. But they're not happy. So now what? Now they start looking for some answers. Right? So then maybe there's something at the yoga studio. You know what I'm saying? So it's a progress. Right? From work, knowledge. That's what Krishna says. So they're following this indirect path. And then we think, oh, they're more developed and elevated than us. They're on the indirect path. Right? So they're there because of, you know, so they're looking for something solid. They don't know. They're not peaceful. They want. So they can sit there for 20 minutes, half an hour and get something, they're happy. You know, and then they go back to the grind and out there, you know, fighting with the material world to make their money. But they're not able to take that and apply that there. You know what I'm saying? And if they can, then what happens next? Are they still a lawyer? No, now they're a New Age guru. And they make more money that way. So then it's easy to sit around and look like you're peaceful because, it's all happening. You know what I'm saying? So the difficulty is that the New Age is just tools and techniques that are standard in the Krishna conscious process. But if we don't recognize them coming from the Vedas, then there's going to be an inconsistency between one and the other. You know what I'm saying? How do you have it? They're sitting there doing some yoga, and then at the same time they go to Glastonbury, program. That's witches. And they're Christians. You know what I'm saying? And they're cool with it. You know, how does this work? You know what I'm saying? They're Christians, you know, they're following their path, you know, but to get a little, you know, peace and all that, they're going to the Glastonbury program with a bunch of pagans. And somehow it's all nice and wonderful. So how does this work? So there's no consistency, that's what I'm saying. If you're a little from here and something from there and something from this and that, and You know, you're so worried about your organic diet and a little bit of this and a little bit of that and your sprouts and your little, you know, Bragg's, what do you call it, you know, soy sauce juice, you know, and all these different things like that. Great. But what's their BMW made out of? You know, how organic is that? You know what I'm saying? So it's inconsistent, their whole process. Because they don't understand Krishna's the center. That's the difference between the indirect and the direct. Direct, there's some idea that God's there. On the lowest level, you just know it's a good thing, and so you give money. You know? You're going to give, because you're giving money, there's a chance you'll give money to the devotees. Therefore, giving in charity, doing good works is a good thing, because if devotees ask them, they also may give to them. They don't know who Krishna is and this and that, but it's a, you know, good thing. But by continuing that, then they will gradually come to know Krishna. Then they'll follow the same thing, you know, giving their money to Krishna, but now it'll be, they'll see the whole work and everything in connection with Krishna. Right? And then it'll slowly go from Sakam to Nishkam, and then up to, you know, proper regulate, you know, then up to pure, you know, I'd say, up to the spontaneous platform. Does that make sense? So New Age is, it's tools. We're the ones that talk about it. Ayurveda is our thing. Astrology is our thing. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, what's new? You know, devotees are so bewildered now, it's a new thing. When I was a kid, my grandmother was, you know, more New Age than these people that you see nowadays. Right? She had a machine, it was this big, that made carrot juice. You know, nowadays, this little dinky thing, you put in the carrots and the juice just comes out. Here, you had to put it in, grind the carrots, then put them up in a cloth, put them in this press, and then the press, a big, huge press, you know, like a big, huge, like, olive press or something, you know, squeeze the thing, then you get the carrot juice, and then she'd give me a glass of that, you know, as you're sitting there watching, what is this? And then, you go to drink it, you can't drink it, right, because you have to chew your liquids and what's it, drink your solids, you know, like that. And then you go into the living room, and on the coffee table, what's there? UFO magazine, 40 and Times, all these things. And where does all this? This goes back to the, you know, 20s and 30s. So New Age was standard stuff in you know, the 20s and 30s in the West. It was very standard. World War II, people then forgot about all that. But, you know, and so now it's all coming back, and ooh, this new fresh, so it's New Age. What do you mean? It's been around forever. You know, and that's based on stuff from Egyptians and this and that, and so how long have they been around? So New Age isn't new at all. It's just new to some people who all they knew before was, you know, how you say the 57 Chevy and, you know, the burger joint and, you know, whistling at the girls and, you know, and Hari Bol. You know, that's it. You know, so now this is something, wow, you know. But otherwise it's always been there. That makes sense. The devotee is equipoised in all circumstances, does not put anyone into difficulty, and is not disturbed by anyone. Right? So he doesn't bother, he's not bothered. And in any situation, he's equipoised. Right? But the point is emotions are there. It's not this idea, you know, the, you know, long hair, the big beard, and the robes, and just whatever happens, oh yes, and you just smile and laugh. You know, that was the 60s idea. Of equipoised. You know, it didn't work. Where are those guys now? Yes.
So is the definition of not being disturbed, meaning we're not deviated from...
We're not deviated, right? We can still see Krishna, know what to do. We don't become overwhelmed with emotion. In other words, you're happy, but then you don't completely forget Krishna. And, you know, go bonkers that way, or get upset and then go into total lamentation. Something goes wrong. It is wrong. It needs to be fixed. You know, and it's not, you know, you have to be sober and think about it and things like that. But you do your service and everything's going nice and great. Wow, hey, this is great. But you don't get distracted and think, okay, it's going to be like this forever and everything's, you know, perfect now. No, it's perfect when it's connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So emotions are there, feelings are there, everything's there. So this equipoise is not the, you know, the Mayavadi concept of equipoise. You know, the Hrishikesh, you know, sadhu form of equipoised. You know, you just sit around and smile and laugh at everything. No, what about this? You know, you know, but, you know, but should I do this? So, I mean, then I should do that. And then they go off and do something. Yeah, Guru Maharaj told me like that. All he did was laugh. You know, so.
Now, this verse
talks
about the one. Understand that suffering should be much greater. Suffering should be much greater.
Yes.
So can we see that, okay, we don't have to go through the full thing of maybe losing something, but we go through the emotional thing of it's being taken away. The emotion can be within the situation.
Well, it's like this. Maybe it's taken away, but maybe that's supposed to happen 100 times. It's only happens going to happen once. You know, or it may be the volume of what's there, like Krishna says, Prabhupada said, you're supposed to lose your arm, but you only get a scratch on your finger. You know, so it can be either way, because sometimes it means the intensity of the application of the particular fruit, but then there's also how much of that fruit you're supposed to get. You know, because you get, it means there are reactions that you get this for so many lifetimes, you'll get this thing. So then it's reduced down. So you end up with getting some reaction here, and then after some point it goes away. Right? But something is there. Otherwise, if there was no problems, everything was perfect, then would there be anybody taking up devotional service? Right? It would be very few, because who are the four kinds of persons who surrender? Right? So three of them are in anxiety. Right? One is financial, one's emotional, and one's intellectual. Right? So they're surrendering because there's a problem. So there's every possibility that when the problem goes away, they'll forget Krishna. Right? The jnani, why he's special, is because he wants to know Krishna. Therefore, these other things are not so important. You know what I'm saying? So that's why everybody should come, you know, to that platform, and then from there progress. You want to know Krishna, so therefore these other things aren't your motive anymore. You know what I'm saying? And then there's a problem because these three kinds of neophytes don't get along. Right? The ones after money, the ones that are anxiety have money. And so they criticize the ones, oh, they just joined Krishna consciousness for the money. You just joined to get rid of anxiety. What's the difference? You know, because we have the money than that. And then the guys that are the intellectuals, and you know, everybody else is out to lunch. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and vice versa. So it's very interesting how these three kinds of neophyte, you know, have their comments about everybody else. You know what I'm saying? One who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activity. So only if it goes nicely, then you'll be able to do nice in Krishna consciousness. If it doesn't go nicely, you won't be able to do nice. So it's whatever the situation you're serving. Who is pure, expert, without cares. Now here, expert then would indicate the element of he actually knows what he's doing. That means he has knowledge. It's not feelings. Expert doesn't mean he's good at revealing his emotions. Means that may be there, let's say, not good at revealing his emotions. Means he is, through the need to reveal his emotions, he's practiced at it. Because someone may know how to reveal emotions because that's the science. You know what I'm saying? Like sometimes you ask a husband, you know, you ever tell your wife, you know, that you love her? Well, you know, she knows that. Why do I have to say that? So he doesn't know the science. So he's unable to reveal. Right? You know the science, it's important. that make sense? So there's a different sin. Right? Pure then, what, you know, indicates, you know, body, mind, and words. Like that. Yes.
Why should you say to your wife you love her when you know that you love Krishna and your relationship with your wife is a material thing that's getting...
Why have a wife? do you, it's just like, okay, you have those glasses. Do they work for you? Are they good?
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay, so then what's the problem if the glasses are insentient, so it doesn't matter if you tell them, but a person wants to know that, you know, the relationship's good and valuable.
But that connotation of love is, in the material world, how we relate it is directly to each other, and then we miss out Krishna in that part. It's always related to each other as people without...
It is, but at the same time, it's a method. It's just like you can do you a scientific experiment at the same time have a purpose for that. Hmm. The two can go on at once.
So you can just say it and know inside it's not meaning it as such because you're thinking it at all. Because basically when I say it to my wife, I understand myself the relationship of the bodily connection and my wife's a partner. But my love, I try to repose on the Lord, so to speak. So I'm now inside what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but as long as you're expressing that so she understands that it's just you're using a different word to define what's necessary. In other words, that you're because of you find being in her association then is valuable for your situation, material situation, so that you're comfortable to be Krishna conscious. So that means that relationship is going to be stable and steady because of that need. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's what's meant by, in the material world, the word love. Because love means you're very attached. Right? It means ultimately you're attached for your own purpose, so it's not actually love. But the point is by local definition, it is. You know, it's just like, let us say you call up the guy outside the front gate and say that you want a car to go to Krishnagar. Right? Now he sends you an ambassador. Is that actually a car? Yeah, but by local definition, it's a car. But in reality, it's not. Do you understand? So by local definition, local usage, then there's that term love. It just means you're attached enough that you're not going to go away. The relationship is stable. So that's there, because if there's not that need, then immediately the next thing that comes is, you know, security. And if one's insecure, you don't want an insecure wife. Yes. Means this means... Yes, that's right. So it's the science. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you're sitting there and petting your, you know, how you say, your pit bull. Oh, nice little doggy. They're not a nice little doggy. You know, they're a mean, nasty, ugly dog. Right? But, you know, you say, oh, cute little doggy. Because, you know, that's just how you feel. Sorry? No. Because even if you take this, then you know, dog's man's best friend. So then if you want to take that, then it's... Because there's the... What is it? Prabhupada quotes... can't remember what his full name is. Something Vidyasagar. He started the Sanskrit University in Calcutta. So then he made the statement that every man in the world has the right to say his wife's the most beautiful. And no one can contest it, because that's the way it is. Because to you, that, you know, does that make sense? Yeah.
May I ask another point? You made a point earlier about the direct and indirect paths.
Mm-hmm.
And relating that to our movement, I see we have the direct path of chanting the Maha Mantra. And then the indirect path, it's not indirect, but...
No, it's within the direct. The direct includes... The direct means it's devotional service. The indirect means it's not devotional service.
Okay.
but is progressive. And can, if you follow it properly, it can give rise to culminating in taking up devotional service.
So the aspect of daily varnasha, when I see that emphasized a lot more than the aspect of direct chanting of the Mahamantra, like more rounds and more connections, so to speak, then I think that daily varnasha for the general devotee means to go outside and work in your varna, so to speak.
But do they know what their varna is?
No, but somehow,
so therefore, is it is
the daily varnashram is connected with varna in their minds, so then they go outside, get a job in what they think is their varna, and then they mix with karma, so to speak. You know? But because the focus or the emphasis isn't placed on the chanting and the surrendering and the remaining in the movement,
yeah.
I see this as
That's there, but it's still the point's being missed.
Right.
Is that do Vaishnavs have a social system?
They should have.
Yeah. So that's what we mean by Daiva Varnashram. Daiva Varnashram is the Krishna conscious social system of devotional service. Right? Because Dharma means to engage your nature. Right? So Sanatana Dharma means the eternal engagement of your nature, which means devotional service. So whatever you're dealing with within the material world, you act according to your nature and you interact with something else according to its nature. But you do that in connection with the Lord, that's Daivi Varnashram. So that's the whole point, it's being missed. They simply see it as a political or economic structure. That's all. But that's not varnashram.
Yeah, I see that when those people doing it.
Yeah, you understand? Just like, what's a kshatriya? What's, in one word, how do you define a kshatriya?
Protection.
So do you ever hear that? No. Yeah, just and they'll talk management. No, it's actually, if you're talking that, in skill, it's administrator. Administrator is different than the manager. Manager you just hire. They can be Vaishyas, they can be Shudras. So everybody can manage, and someone who's a manager by occupation is generally a Vaishya or Shudra. Right? Kshatriyas are administrators.
So should our TVs be managers? Vaishyas and so on? I often see they are.
It means they can be any kind of leadership position. You know, as long as they know the administrative field. You know what I'm saying? So they can be Brahma, Kshatriya, or Vaishya, it's no problem. You know what I'm saying? That works. If someone's very advanced in devotional service, doesn't matter if they're Shudra either. You know, as long as they're somehow or another able, through the etiquette, to engage everybody else and not that, then everything will get done. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't actually matter, but technically the position they're in is that of an administrator, because they have to create a protective environment in which everybody can engage their nature in Krishna service. So if they can't see nature, then they won't be as suited. They won't be able to do as much. So that's why if unless they're really high-grade Vaishya, it'll be hard for them, because they'll just see, you know, what makes money. Right? You know, it's just like brahmacharis and brahmacharinis. What are their value? Right? They make money. Right? So that's the point. Not that they, you know, it means you do the puja because you have to maintain that, otherwise you're not a temple. Right? But, you know, other than that, then they make money. Because otherwise they're not engaged in cleaning the temple. And not engaged in so many other activities. You know. You know what I'm saying? Going out and doing a program in the community in the evening, you know, is not worthwhile unless it makes money. You know, so
it's very painful to see when the president has this mentality always, and you can see it and you
but the point is that you just do what you can add to the community. You know, because it's he's there. That's his job. In other words, seeing that that's broadened, that's GBC's business. Yeah. You know, because it's not that some Vaishya can't run a nice community. Nanda Baba's a Vaishya. Right? But he deals in the administrative area. So it's much broader. So he's protecting. You know, why did they leave Gokul? It wasn't safe. So to protect his citizens, they moved to a different place. But they're Vaishyas. So they still run the, you know, this element of protection and stuff like that. You know, so then it has to have that flavor. Otherwise, it won't be broad enough. Yes, had a meeting with the elders. He has his Brahmins. He has, you know, so it's run like that. So generally, the heads of the villages and like that are Vaishyas. Right? Does that make sense? But they live like kings. Like that. But they're on a small level. They're not doing a whole country. They're doing a village. You know, like that. Is that? Without cares, that doesn't mean that he doesn't deal properly. It means that if it goes nicely or not nicely, he's not worried. Because whatever the situation, he's trying to make it nice for Krishna, but if it doesn't, then he'll work out how to make it nice for Krishna. So he's not in anxiety there. Free from all pains, right? Nothing bothers him. Nothing's an anxiety to do for Krishna. Right? So he's always, you know, like that. So that means his, you know, the mechanics of things reverse on you, you move forward, right? You know, emotional issues come up, you move forward. You know, you're not disturbed that, you're not thinking that everything's going to work perfectly on the mechanical platform or the emotional platform. You just deal with it, whatever it is.
This dealing, how does it go?
How did the dealing go? It means through the intelligence, then you see what's the appropriate thing to do. You know, what will be the best thing for, you know, moving forward devotional service, and then do that. Right? Like that. So that's why one's equipoise, because it doesn't matter if it's a good situation or a bad situation, you could do the same work. He probably gives the example, a rice husker, the machine, whether it's in heaven or in hell, it does the same work. It doesn't change. So therefore it doesn't matter to us, you know, where we are and where we are. We still do the same work. We still, you know, chant. We still preach. We still do our service. So that's something. And does not strive for some result. That means for himself. He's trying to get a nice result for Krishna, but not for himself. He's very dear to Krishna. One who is undisturbed in all circumstances and renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things for Krishna is very dear to him. That's a tough one. Because, okay, inauspicious things, yeah, we want to get up, but auspicious things? Why do we like auspicious things?
Because we get attached to them, and we start to identify them.
But why do we get attached?
Because they make us happy.
They make us happy. And why do they make us happy?
Because
they're according to the rules, so good following the rules, they? Yeah, they generate artha. They generate good results. Yes.
We define them as good.
We define them as good. That's there. Yes, we define them as good. But the auspicious means it's according to proper work, so therefore it gives proper results. So getting proper results, we'll say, is good. This is the problem in that the definition of simply saying that's good, because then good means it gives results. Right? So then what happens if we follow something inauspicious and get a good result? Right? So technically it could be called good. This is where the weakness is. Right? So in other words, we act according to Shastra, but we're not attached that to the thing that because this is, I like this because it's auspicious and I don't like this because it's inauspicious.
Right? How does that work when you're performing activities? Like for example, when you want to get married, you look for an auspicious time.
Yeah, but its point is why do you want an auspicious time? What's the reason?
Get the result.
Get the result for?
So that the actual activity goes
well, but why do you want a good result? so you can enjoy. So then that's a problem. That's attachment to auspiciousness. What would have been a better, you know, how you say, progression on that path? Yes. Yes. In other words, it's auspicious, so therefore it works mechanically well, so that therefore you can focus on Krishna. But even if it didn't work well, you could still focus on Krishna. But the point is the idea of marriage is that you go through all these things. We have an idea, right? Why does somebody get married? Because they think, I'm going to get married because I really, really want to be in the most distressful and, you know, anxiety-ridden situation that I could be in possibly, because that way I'll know the material world is just bad. Right? Right? That's why we get married. No? Yeah? That's what you were thinking. Yeah, well, I could remain a brahmachari and all that and, you know, peacefully go through life, but, you know, I'm sinful, you know, I'm in the material. Why should I enjoy so much? Right? Yeah? No, okay. So, one gets married because one will think, it will be nice, right? The brahmacharis in the temple, right? What's the problem? Or say, who's the problem? The temple commander, right? Doesn't let you do anything, right? You know, you want to take a nap. Hey, this is Maya. You know, you want to do this. Hey, this is nonsense. You know, it's like that. So, if you get married, you're independent. You do whatever you like and everything like that. No? That's the idea, right? So then one picks an auspicious time for one's newfound independence. And then what do you find out? That you have a new temple commander. Because this one has a sikha a little bit bigger than the one in the temple. Yes, and a bit nicer to look at, and like that. Does that make sense? Right. So that's the point, is that then you understand is that the material world isn't a place where you can be happy. Right? So it's not a matter of repulsion, it's a matter of you don't need anything. Right? It does not strive for some result. So therefore, coming to that realization, then it doesn't matter if your situation is a grihastha or not. So the grihastha ashram is going nicely, then you do your service there. If it's not going nicely, then you don't do your service there. But the point is that service is the important element. And you're connecting everything to the Lord. So it's a situation in which that can be done. But we think there's something else besides that. It's going to be so fabulous and this and that and, you know, there's more anxiety. Yes.
But then that wouldn't necessarily strive for the auspiciousness, but you would say
No, the point is who's the result for?
Yeah, so if you're executing devotional service, you look for
auspiciousness. Yeah, but the point is why do you want the marriage to go nicely?
So
you can remember Krishna, but what's the other point? What we just mentioned before. We were just talking about. Service goes smoothly, but there was something in between. Maybe we didn't catch it.
You have the situation where you can continue to do service.
You have the situation which you can continue to do service. There's still one thing we've missed. I think there's a mental block here that it shouldn't be there.
You realize the material world is.
You realize that even the best grihastha ashram that's perfect still doesn't compare to the quality of direct devotional service. But how will you know unless you see it? Right? If you're always fighting, then you'll always think, no, but if there wasn't this fighting, then grihastha life would be great. But if it's not fighting, it's going perfectly, then you see it's perfect, but it's still not as good as this. But so what's the problem? In the beginning, let us say we have an idea that something should be great. Right? And then you know, so we're really attached to the idea. How long does it take to understand it's not so great?
When you have it.
Huh?
As soon as you have it.
may if you're more intelligent, but many people it takes a while. You know, they jump off the bridge, you know, like that, and then they bounce at the bottom and, you know, barf all over the place like that. And, you know, so it was a bit exhilarating and this and that. They do it a few more times and they think, this is crazy. Why do I need to barf in public? You know, like that, you know. You have to pay so much money, you go to so much trouble. You can just do that right on the side of the road, you know. Save a lot of money, right? Might get a ticket, but. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, because it's going nice, then you can compare. You know, if I say, so which is better, this rock or the other rock?
The other.
The other. He's got it down. Okay, so, you know, you have to just be able to convert this into Upanishadic language. There's this and there's that. So this is material world, that's there. So the other rock is better. Yes. Even he hasn't seen it, he knows it's better. He has that faith. Like this. This is called, yes, this is faith. And not, you know, what do you call it? Putting your trust in something sublime. Right? Does this make sense? Right? So that's why you want it to be auspicious, so that it goes nicely. One, so you can engage it properly in Krishna's service. And two, because then it's as good as it gets. But you also have to know the science of what's as good as it gets. Otherwise, we'll also be an illusion thinking what it could be. Like that. But it's not necessarily.
Because of the same conclusion we have in the material world. We're trying to get something and it doesn't work out. It didn't work out because it didn't get the idea.
Yeah, you didn't. So that's where Prabhupada talks about mental speculation. Because then you think, well, if I did it like this, then it would work. And then you do it like that. No, but I should have done it like that. And you can go on this like this forever. So that's by being purified, then we give up this tendency to speculate on the varieties of ways. If we made the adjustment, then it would have worked. Does that make sense? Yes.
And my astrology done by
David Rishi
for the day. It was like, oh, good, auspicious, wonderful. And I remember thinking, I must have a really unrealistic expectation of happiness in the material world.
Okay.
Because I was thinking, you know, if this is like so good, you know, then.
If this is as good as it gets, then. I gotta rethink this.
Yeah, so you think that there's something more.
There's something more, but material world doesn't have something more. I mean, something more, of course, is 8,400,000 species of life, you know. Worm and stool, hey, you know. It's like, you know, it's warm, it's cozy, you know. Lots of association, you know, like that. You know, so you can, you know, look at the good side, you know. So
if we have this hope that there's something more.
That's the problem. That's why one has to be properly situated in, according to Varnan Ashram, but using that connected to Krishna, and at the same time, nicely situated within the process of devotional service, when sadhana, you know, and these is proper. When both, all these are good, then you can advance very nicely, because devotionally it's moving very quickly, at the same time you're engaging everything, there's nothing to get in the way of that, and you start to have more of a realistic view. So the point is realistic doesn't mean, oh, this is disgusting, this and that. It's a matter of, it's great, but, you know, it's not great enough, you know. Does that make sense? So it's like, yeah. Because point is like says, you know, somebody, you know, general person, they have a car. Right? One car. And maybe they get their dream car. Right? But they have one of that. And so they go on like this. What happens if you're hundreds of thousands of times more rich than that? Then you've got your dream car. Then what? Then it was, you know, after a while it's not, there's something. Then what do you do? Yeah, you start collecting. You get another one. You get, well, maybe it was, you know, it was too a little too sporty. I need something a little bit more, you know, like that. Okay, with the Porsche, maybe, you know, we need Bentley. Well, that was, but maybe we need the Rolls. And, well, this is too, you know, just too formal. Well, now we need a Hummer, right? You know, like that. But then that was okay. Now we need a stretch Hummer. Right, you know, so like that. Now these are too big and clunky, you know. So then you got to get yourself, you know, some little two-seater thing, you know. So it just goes on and on and on. So generally, see, really, they all have like 10, 15 cars, you know. But still, you know, but it's just, you know, it's pretty ordinary, you know. You know, it's coming in, you know, saying, "Hey, Mom, I'm going to party. Can I take the Lamborghini?" He says, "Oh, well, no, I was going to the spa tonight. You know, you take the Ferrari." "Okay, okay, Mom." You know, like that, you know. You know, so, you know, this kind of thing, right? You know, so it's just, it becomes pretty ordinary. But because they don't see in connection to Krishna, then they don't understand that there's something more. So they, the things start to run out, so they just have to get into more and more things. But if they understand that actually there's something else, then very quick, easily, they just go, "Oh, this is not there." So the point is when materially things go nice, you understand nothing's here. And when it doesn't go nice, you understand it's not here. Does that make sense? So, what means... So we see this devotionally, right? So it doesn't matter the situation. We understand the material world is not good, right? We're used to seeing it when it's bad, that's the reason it's not good. But when it's going good, no. No, but when it's going good, we also understand. What's the difference? Because we're thinking that that nice material facility and nice arrangements is the actual good thing. But when you understand, no, Krishna consciousness is the real thing. Because otherwise, then where are we making profit? Right? If it's looking at it materially, where do we make profit? Yeah, when it's going up. Right? But we see in the material world, those who are expert, they can make it going up or down. Right? Stock market crashes. So many people are, you know, this and that. There's guys that are making billions. Right? It's not that before the, what we called it? Not the depression, recession, right? So it's a nice form of saying depression, right? In other words, it fell more than it did in the Great Depression. But, you know, they call it recession. Nobody feels bad. Right? So, in there, but so from the day that started, there are no new millionaires or billionaires, right? They're all the same guys looking Forbes magazine, same faces again, you know, like that. You know, they put them in a different thing. You know, now they're on this guy's yacht instead of that guy's yacht because, you know, they had to, you know, like that. And you know, it's getting, the magazine's getting thinner and thinner, you know, right? Isn't it? No, you know, it's more and more. Why? Because people, they know how to do it. So therefore, that principle, where does that come from? Where do all principles come from? Krishna. So that means, therefore, if you actually understand the process, right, they understand economics. That's why they can do this. Someone who doesn't, he understands maybe business, he fails. If it's good, he works. If it doesn't, he fails. But someone who understands economics, the principle of the business, it doesn't matter which way it's going. So you understand the principle. It's come from Krishna. Therefore, whether your family life is going nice or not nice, and it'll do both, you're making profit. Why? Because you know that whether it's going nice, it's still not as good as chanting. And if it's not going nice, that's just the material world. That's the way it is. Right? It gives trouble. And even if it doesn't give trouble, it's still not that great. You understand? So this is also what's meant by expert. You understand how to apply these things. This philosophy here applies in everyday life. You see that, that's expert. You don't see that, then, you know, it means you know the philosophy of it. But it doesn't mean you can apply it in your life. Right? Other than direct things. Okay, I'm chanting, therefore I can apply it. But all these other aspects, these indirect, one can't. And the problem is the indirect is getting in the way of the direct. Right? We have faith that the indirect will make me happy. When you figure out it won't make you happy, then you stick to the direct. And the indirect is you have to situate yourself somewhere in the material world. So whatever works in Krishna consciousness, what's the problem? family's favorable, they're Krishna conscious, what does it matter? You're self-realized, well, what's the problem in being in that situation? Bhaktivinoda Thakur was. You know, it worked, so he didn't have any problem. Right? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur decided not to situate himself there. You know, it worked for him, not like that. Does that make sense? Yes.
So Prabhupada used to praise his Grihastha disciples, saying that they're as good as sannyasis, they're doing this.
Because the engagement, well, if you look at it, it was just husband and wife cooperating together to do preaching. So that's all they did. They weren't making money. They weren't doing this and that. So they were engaged like that. So they were, but at the same time as they were more comfortable being situated as a husband and wife. So that kind of interaction and that, you know, I'd say platform of emotional interaction is there. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, in between they're preaching. You know what I'm saying? You know, because the brahmachari sannyasis aren't out 24/7. There's a certain part of the day they're out preaching. And so that same amount of the day the grihasthas were out preaching. You know, when the brahmacharis come back, hang out with the brahmacharis, they go home and hang out with their family. You know, so they were as good. Does that make sense? Because of the directness here. You know what I'm saying? So that doesn't mean, oh, grihastha is as good as a sannyasi. It is if they're doing that work. So then like that. But otherwise, it's being engaged indirectly. So if you are as engaged in the Lord's service, then in that way also it's as good as. But the situation that you're in, there's more indirect than direct. So that's not as ideal. But if one's situated like that, with time, the direct will become more prominent. That's what vanaprastha is for. Right? It means now again the direct becomes more prominent. So does that make sense?
For grihasthas who are in a social circle, others who see that he is working and he's connecting to Krishna and is in a similar situation, is that favorable? I mean, by the person sometimes contemplates a sannyasi and he says, I can never get there, it's too far from me.
It doesn't matter. The situation isn't the point. The point is what you do with the situation you're in. Right? You know, because otherwise, at the conclusion of the Gita, then Arjuna took sannyas, right? Went off to the Himalayas. No. So the point is wherever you situate yourself, you perform service. That's the point, Daiva Varanashram. So, according to your conditioned nature, in its state now, that's where you situate yourself. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that you deal with it and what it is. You know, you know, let's say the fruit is green. What do you do with it?
You wait.
You wait. And then when the fruit's ripe?
You use it.
You use it. So that's the point, is whatever state it's at, that's how it's engaged. So that's the point. Yes.
How do we understand our conditioned nature? Because sometimes we are given service which we don't fit in it.
You don't fit in it. How do you know you don't fit in it? If you don't know your nature, how do you know you don't fit?
Because it seems like it's going against our nature. So.
But why would you say it's going against your nature if you don't know your nature? Maybe it is going with your nature and just you think it should be going another way. What's the problem in it? It means, what is the difficulty that you experience in it going against your nature? What's the difficulty?
When you're in a different environment, you feel that suits you.
That suits you. What do you mean by suit?
You feel more comfortable working there.
Comfortable. So that means the tailor's good. Right? Like civil row guys or... What do you mean by good?
You
But why? But how is it conducive? You understand? In other words, the problem here is when we say, how do you understand your conditioned nature? What does understand imply? Which material element?
Intelligence.
And what are the answers you've given me so far about your nature and being situated?
Emotion.
This doesn't feel good, this feels good. So feeling is
the mind.
So now you're feeling, but if you want to understand, you have to apply your intelligence. Because unless you can say why, then you're not using intelligence. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? If you can't tell the difference between one thing and another, how do you know what to choose or what you're dealing with? You know what I'm saying? That's it.
Maharaj, would the feelings be a clue to start?
Feelings can be a clue, but unless you can analyze it, then what are you going to do? How are you going to understand?
I mean, a clue to start with.
It's a clue to start with. No, that's not a problem. That's what I'm saying. But then we see that very quickly we run out of answers. So that means there isn't contemplation. So you know what I'm saying? So he has to think, why is it that this one feels good and this one doesn't? Because self-satisfaction is it's the fourth element to figure out, you know, if you're situated properly. But unless you can analyze why that is, how do you know?
Which are the other three?
That it's based on Shastra and Shastra, it's based on tradition, and it's based on the direction of authority.
And self-satisfaction would be the fourth.
Yeah, and self-satisfaction is the fourth. Right? So if all those four are there, then you can say you're rightly situated. But, yes.
You can be good at something, but you might not like that would be your nature.
You have to see, because just because you're good at it doesn't mean that that's your nature. It may be just a misunderstanding. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say the person's from a business family, and he can do business nicely, but he doesn't like the dealings, you know, because everybody's sitting around with big crocodile grins and, you know, all this kind of things. But, you know, nobody really means it, right? It's just what makes profit. So he doesn't like that. So then the point is that not liking that because there's actually something more developed that is natural for him, or it's just he has to understand the business of the nature of business, right? Manu describes it as satyanrita, right? As an occupation. So satyanrita means half truth, half lie. That's business. Right? So that's just the way it is. Does that make sense?
So then,
you have to see all the different symptoms. Right? In other words, why are you motivated? You know? Does that make sense? You know, that's the point, is that, you know, you're motivated because it makes the money and stuff like that, but you just don't like the way it's done. So then it just means you are a business person, you just have to find a particular business where the dealings between the people are something you like better. You know, like get into like, you know, organic, you know, bean sprouts or something. You know, like that. That might, you know, the people might be more nice or something, you know. You might have that also. You do in Kali Yuga have the element of a prominence of Varna Shankara, so that element is there. You know what I'm saying? You know, so, you know, your father's Punjabi, you know, your mother's from Madras, you know, you might actually have a difference in nature. It may be hard to figure out what you want to do. You know, that's why I said like-minded persons. If they're like-minded, then it doesn't matter who's from where. But if they actually have different natures, then it's going to reflect in your... So then you have to find something that basically adjusts with that, but, you know, whichever one's prominent, you have to situate yourself. Okay? Yeah, means you have a nature, so that defines your duty. Like that. Means you know you're interested in family life, so therefore you have the duties that go with family life. Right? You know, you have the interest to study, so you have those duties that go with that situation. So, free from contaminating association, silent and satisfied with anything. Right? Silent means, you know, doesn't speak things that are not connected to Krishna. Satisfied with anything means whatever the result comes, whatever one gains, one is satisfied. But that doesn't mean that one stops working, because it's your duty to continue working and producing results, you do that. But whatever is coming, you're satisfied. Who does not care for any residence. Right, he's thinking that this residence, that's what's going to make me happy, that's what's going to make everything perfect. No, it's wherever you naturally can be situated. And then that's what's engaged in Krishna's service. But it's not that the residence, that's your identity, and that's what makes the whole process work.
Maharaj, on the other hand, can this not care for any residence? Sometimes we go into a house and the static is very...
But that's like the other one of, what was it? Without cares. You know, they just don't care, you know. But the point is results for Krishna. The point is you don't care for any residents, but the point is let us say you come home one day and there's another family in there. You know, then what? Then are we going to see that they don't care for any residents? Yeah. Or let's say, okay, it's your, but then the point is you don't care for any residence, but whose residence is it? If it's Krishna, you take care of it. If you don't care for your own, but it's Krishna's, you take care of it. You don't take care of it means you think it's yours. So therefore, then you can be renounced and not take care of it. But that's not how it works, because it's Krishna's. Right? Even the marriage ceremony, one of the first mantras that the man says right in the beginning is this bride belongs to Vishnu. So you're taking care of Vishnu's maidservant. Right? It's not, this is my wife, so I do whatever I want. No, you do what is necessary to take care of Krishna's maidservant, engage in Krishna's service. You know what I'm saying? So, because they are feminine nature, therefore you have to take care of the whole nature, not just which parts you like to take care of. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, so that was something like the attachment to mode of goodness. Sometimes we see that very senior devotees, they put like relatively a lot of emphasis to live in a sattvic environment and that. With their own sadhana, but still they are fully engaged and it's not...
Like, yeah, so don't worry about it. They're engaged. You worry about yourself. Self-realization. So what's the point? What's the lesson to learn? If we get down to the essence, what's the lesson to learn? That's another thing, but what's the essential point? What's our inspiration? Because otherwise you can say, okay, if I look at what he does... then in my mind it doesn't balance, so therefore I should just stick to my own. You know what I'm saying? What's actually the essential point? Devotional service, but how do you apply it in this situation? You know what I'm saying? How do you apply it? You already said it. But you're not catching that you said a run of words and definitions. One of those was the essential. That's the point you can take inspiration from and apply in your life. The other parts you're not going to be able to apply in your life.
It's more conducive to the subject environment.
No, but that's for him. But he already gave an example that there's another senior devotee. They're not necessarily so, you know, sattvic or worried about all these little, you know, traditional little rules, but they're very nicely engaged and very well situated, and they're happy. Right? And so now seeing that, so how important is the mode of goodness in my life? You understand? That's his confusion. But the point is he's missed the essential point. He's discussing an external point.
So the point is to be engaged, whatever
is... His point is this person's engaged fully in Krishna's service. So they don't have the capacity to be so clean and sattvic and this and that. But their engaged nature, whatever it is fully engaged. So the essence is, whatever your nature is, fully engaged in Krishna's service. So you can take inspiration. Well, he's, you know, satisfied and dynamic and doing according to his nature, so I can do the same thing according to my nature. The principle is engage your nature. That's why I'm saying it's external. Well, he's not in the mode of goodness, but he's doing okay, so does that mean that I don't need to be in the mode of goodness to do okay? No, that's an external question. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah, so you have to see the principle. Okay, let us say 10 cooks go into the kitchen on Sunday, right, to cook for this Sunday feast, right? Now, there's two ways to approach it, by the internal and by the external, okay? So now, if we approach it by the external, when the pujari comes in to make the offering, what's he going to see? According to his anxiety.
Presentation, the cover.
That's okay.
Their own
time.
Mess.
Hmm?
Time.
Bit of a mess.
Bit of a mess. Why is it going to be a mess?
Too many cooks.
Okay, too many cooks? Okay, maybe.
A lot of passion, a lot of things going on.
Okay, but let's say they're all good cooks and they're really focused and they know what to do.
As many things happen at once.
But even they can balance all that out. What's the problem between the two? What was the anxiety? The anxiety was, is this person does it like that, he's successful. So, and I'm thinking, you know, motive, he's using more passion or something, and I'm using, I would naturally think towards goodness, because that's what the Shastra is recommending. So, but he's not, so therefore, should I do that? Or should I do this? You understand? But if he understands the essence is engage your nature, then it doesn't matter that they're different, but the result's the same, full engagement. Does that make any more clear to what I'm saying as you'll have? Huh? They're all engaged. So if they're all engaged, then they could all be cooking different preparations, but they would be using the science of cooking, and they would be satisfied. Right? So the pujari would come in and see 10 different preparations. But if we went by the external element, he'd come in and find there'd be 10 of the same preparation. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's the reason the Vedic system is varna and ashram. You know, devotees will say, oh, that's some old archaic thing. No, this is so far beyond anything that anybody else can dream of. Right? Because you have seemingly 8 different opposing situations working very peacefully together. Right? That makes sense? Let us say you have a social system, you have monarchy. Okay? So, how many social systems are we dealing with? Or let's say we take communism. Or democracy. Right. How many are we dealing with?
Each one is one.
The Vedic has all of them functioning at once. But just there's the proper... What does what? It does only that. You understand? Does that make sense? So that's the element, is that they're able to combine all these together, but unless you can understand each one, you can't understand how they go together. How long have you been there? 30 seconds, okay. I was going to say, yeah. I was going to say, does this guy just appear now? Says, if you've been there all this time, he says, wow. Okay. Next time, you know, the puff of smoke would be, you know, a good indication. Oh, okay. You know, because it's not that they actually need smoke to appear. It's just so that it gives the effect, you know, then everybody else is mystified and like that. You know. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. In other words, that's the point, is engage your nature, then that's the point. If they had engaging their nature, then that's fine. So whatever it is you're comfortable with doing, then that's what you do. So there's a natural recommendation. Because the person who's engaging passion now, come back in 10 years, and it won't be as passionate. You know what I'm saying? Slowly, slowly move towards. And so you see there's more and more. It moves anyway, naturally towards goodness. So if you're inclined towards it, you start there. But the point is the essential point is your engagement. Because just as passion has problems for engagement, goodness has problems. The better goodness and passion. You know, so until it's pure goodness, then there's always going to be a little bit of a problem.
Maharaj, you mentioned the theoretical system. For sannyasis, we have a very free system. Is it almost like anarchism?
Yeah. That's the way Brahmins work. No one's their authority, but the scriptures are authority, so they're self-disciplined.
What about for kshatriyas? They have...
That's monarchy.
Monarchy.
The Vaishyas is democracy. They always want everything equal. Why? Because it's equal, but then I can make money. That's all. They, you know, so democracy, justice, ethics, these are very important. Who jumps up and down the most when something goes wrong ethically? It's Vaishyas. Kshatriyas understand. Brahmins understand. You know, unless they're so fixed in their dharma and they can't like this and that. But they understand things go wrong. Right? It's like this. When you talk about, let's say you have a general discussion amongst some people, right? Contemporary environment. And you discuss Henry VIII. Okay? What would be the discussions? What points would come up?
Married six wives.
Married six wives. Okay, but are there anybody complaining he married six wives?
No.
Not really.
Executed.
He executed a few of them. Okay, maybe that could have been adjusted. You know, he didn't like them, he could have just gotten rid of them or something like that.
Went against the Pope.
Huh?
Went against the Pope.
Okay. Okay, now create a new religion. But does anybody come up and say, Henry VIII never should have been king? Does that ever come up? Any high school or college discussion that the teacher tries to somehow or another get all the kids into, and, you know, let's have some deep... Is that ever a discussion? Never. It's never a discussion. Okay? Now you take a contemporary administrative leader. They do one thing. You know, and does anybody have problem that, okay, he had six wives. How many other ladies were involved in his life? Does that even matter at all? No, that doesn't even come across as a point of discussion. Right? So, you know, hundreds of chambermaids, this, that, and who knows what. You know, nobody cares. But nowadays, if there's one, oh, that's it, he's unqualified to lead the country, this, that, so many. But are the other heads of state saying that? You ever see a statement come from another country? Yes, we don't want to be involved with this, you know, because he did this. Does it ever come up? No. You understand? What about all those Brahmins engaged in the state affairs? You know, your Secretary of State, your this one. Are they complaining? No. So who's complaining? It's coming from the down level, those who represent the people. Right? They're the ones that are complaining. You understand? Because it's understood, this happens. It's not good, but it happens. You know what I'm saying? You know, you train horses, you might end up with a broken arm or a leg. You know? So that means now you get rid of horses, or now you get rid of trainers, or... You know what I'm saying? No. It's part of the... It happens. It's not good, so it should be kept in line. You know, so if he had been a little bit more careful there, things might have worked a little more nicely. You know? Does that make sense? So, That's the thing, is that the different people have different things. A Shudra, how does it work for communism? Because they just want to be taken care of. But the problem with communism wasn't that the state would give them free water and free accommodation and everything. Was that the complaint?
No.
The complaint was is that other freedoms that they might enjoy in democracy and that they didn't have. Right? Because now a complaint. Now you have to buy this and that and so many things. Well, before the state gave it. So all it is just, you know, what's important for one or the other? They just want to be taken care of. Right? Does that make sense? Shudra wants to work for somebody. Vaishya doesn't. You know, so it's just the way it is. So they all match together if you know where to place them. Right? Let us say you have a Brahmin, right? And, you know, he lives in his village, and their line of study and practice is Ayurveda. Right? Okay? So now you have a medical problem, and you go to him. Any difficulties? Right? Okay. So, you know, what about monetarily difficulties?
No.
No. Okay. Now what happens when the Vaishyas take over the medical system?
You can die in the corridor.
Yeah, you could die in the corridor, or, you know, $1.2 million, and hey, we'll fix you right up. You know what I'm saying? This is the point. The problem is that because the wrong people are controlling the wrong things. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's where it goes wrong. Government controls the education, or businessmen control. Not in universities, because they can't take care. Companies are taking over. And so they'll run the curriculum they want and turn out the students they want. So that means so many topics are going to go by the wayside. Not that it's necessarily a loss on, you know, in specific, you know, like probably with time, Greek literature might disappear from the curriculum, you know, like if it's up to the big businessmen. But so on the material platform, you know, I mean, in the modern platform, it may be a loss, you know, but on the transcendental it may not be. But the principle that, you know, it's education is based towards simply business, but you're taking people who, no matter what their nature is, and turning them into Shudras. That's a problem. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So this is the difficulty when somebody in one area gets involved in another area that they shouldn't. Does that make sense? So that's why it has to be, the Vedic then gives what is the balance, how much authority someone has in what area. In other words, everyone has their rights, so that means there's a limit to what is your right. So everyone has rights and obligations. So your rights are what you get, your obligations are what are towards others. So that's what scientific, the Vedic literature, the Vedic system defines that. The modern doesn't. It's equal opportunity for anyone who can take it. Right? And they say equality, but it still comes down to who can do it. You know what I'm saying? Before it was limited, so the job opening comes up, there's only 3 people to apply. But now it's equal opportunity, so 300 apply. But now, before 3 people applied, 1 got. So that means 30% of the people were placed. Okay, now, then, you know, 100 people show up. But how many people will get the job? 1. So how much percentage is placed?
1%.
So it's not that it's improved. They'll say it's improved, but it hasn't improved. You know, so that's the difficulty.
In agricultural colleges, we see that the majority of people just trying to be shooters, like they'll be employed by one commercial shop or farm. Very few actually be Vaishyas. And some can even be like Brahmins who would be teaching and studying all their lives. But the whole system is to make shooters. It's labor.
Yeah, so all of the systems are like that. Because if you have, that means that somebody was pointing out, it was somebody who when he was just a low-level politician. He became, you know, knew the devotees and friends of the devotees, and, you know, they helped him a lot, and he felt quite comfortable. So he rose up to very high position in the government. You know, one of the main ministers, or maybe even, I'm not even sure, not prime minister, but like that kind of level. And then he made a comment that basically the government looks at there's two kinds of people. Those who run the system and those who are run by the system. So they don't mind if you run the system as long as you can do it. But if you can't, you have to be run by the system. So they don't want a third option that you're not run by the system and don't run. So that's for them. He says there's just these two kinds. So that's all. You know, either you're the Vaishya and you're clever enough to get on top of the pile, or you know, you're managed by them. Does that make sense? So the Vedic system then sees everyone's nature and engages them accordingly. So it may seem, okay, well, you don't get as much out of it, but even if you get, what are you getting? The guy makes hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, but is the quality of his life in the way of relationships improved? I mean, that's what it's supposed to do, right? It's supposed to get more money, it's supposed to be happy. And happiness is based on these relationships. So has it improved? No. But if you adjusted things in that, and okay, maybe you only make, you know, a few tens of thousands, you know, but everything, you know, is, you know, quieted down, then he may be actually more happy because of the relationships and stuff. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, because, you know, the interesting thing is to actually work on those top levels, you actually need all these qualities. That's the fun part. Is you want to be successful even in the material world, big, you know, for whatever the business administration, be top guys, you have to have these same qualities. But they're not connected to Krishna. You know, like that. Like someone is telling me, he's one of these, you know, top level guys in this huge oil company. You know, one of the top or one of the top, I think there's two or three that are the top, like that, in there. And he makes immense amounts of money, you know, ridiculous amounts of money. But his job is whenever there's some kind of a thing that needs to get done, wherever it is in the world, he has to go there and fix it. So he can fix one job, you know, say, you know, over in Hong Kong, and go back to wherever his house is, I forget where it is. And then he could be sitting there for weeks, or they could call him after an hour. So he never knows how long he's going to be able to sit there with his family, or how long he's going to be gone. So for him to survive, he has to be one who has no care for any residents. Because he actually can't dictate at all. Say, no, this is, you know, a Labor Day weekend. I'm spending the time with my family. He can't say that. Some problem comes up, he's gone. He's on the next flight out of there. Of course, he goes, flies first class. They pay for everything. He'll stay in five-star hotels. But it doesn't matter. He can't dictate when he's with his family, what time he spends with them. Nothing. So you have to have all these qualities. Equipoise in all circumstances, you know, you're head of state, you walk in, and they're insulting your country and this, you just have to smile and go through the whole thing and work it all out and, you know. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, you have to have these qualities anyway to be successful. But the point is if you're going to go to all that trouble, why not get Krishna? Instead of just some position that after a while they're going to kick you out anyway and you're going to die. Does that make sense? So that's it. Fixed in knowledge, right? So you're able to see everything connected with knowledge. Right? Because everything that goes on is based on knowledge. It's not coming from somewhere else. You know? And what was the other one? Fixed in knowledge and engaged in devotional service is very dear to Krishna. So all these things. And he's always engaged in devotional service, no matter what the situation, what the emotions, what anything, then he's always engaged. So this is very dear to Krishna. Those who perform devotional service with faith, making Krishna the supreme goal, are very... Isn't that the place where it's very, very dear? Okay. So all this is very dear. So Krishna's the goal. You have faith in him, and Krishna's the goal. So that means your sambandha is solid, and your prayojana is solid. And you're always engaged in devotional service, that your abhideya is solid. So that's the three things, basically. Faith in Krishna, always engaged in service, and Krishna is always the supreme goal. You have these three. Everything else are details of mechanics and how you get that done. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verses 18 and 19, "We may find some repetition in the descriptions of the qualifications of a devotee, but this is just to emphasize the fact that a devotee must acquire all these qualifications. Without good qualifications, one cannot be a pure devotee. Harav abhaktasya kuto mahadguna. One who is not a devotee has no good qualification. One who wants to be recognized as a devotee should develop the good qualifications." In other words, it's there. You endeavor for them, but you don't endeavor separately. That's the difficulty with the New Age, is you think separately I'm going to get this. No, it's done through practice of devotional service. Like that. Yes.
So it said that one who's not a devotee has no good qualifications. But
yes.
At the same time, all these mundane, materialistic activities, you actually need the good devotional qualifications.
But what is the basis of there?
So
why
misuse,
do they have it?
The misuse.
Yeah. Because the point is they may be very tolerant. He doesn't get angry in any situation. No matter what comes up, who says what to him, he never gets angry. Right?
Mm.
And so, but why is he using this?
For some,
so he can make his money.
Money
or he never gets angry, he just sees what to do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, you come in, yell and scream at him, this and that, he just sits there and nods his head. Doesn't get angry, doesn't say nothing. Then you finish your thing, Tirad, you walk out the door, you know, and all that, and march down the stairs, and as you get out to the corner, then two guys come up to you, you know, a car drives around the corner, they shoot you in the back of the head and put you in the back seat of the car, you know, so. He never got angry. You know? You did. You're dead. He's not. You know, so, like that. You know, so I'm saying because the point is it's ultimate is what's the final. You know, because that's what you have to look at. That's why the focus is always on the goal. What do you do with it? The goal itself, what do you do with it? Then everything else everything else naturally becomes connected. If you can do the whole thing, that's better, because Krishna's pointed it out here. You know, having faith, that means you're dealing with the beginning. Seeing him as the goal, and then you're dealing with the activities to get. Right? But if nothing else, if you're going to start anywhere, start on that goal. Right? It's for Krishna. Even if you don't understand, you're not the body, if you gave the money or did the service for Krishna, you will benefit. But if you think, I'm not the body, did no service, or didn't do anything to please Krishna, what's the use? Right? So you're starting with there. So, therefore, what's the ultimate end? So can you say it's good? Like that? You know, the guy's so nice with all his cows and really loves them and this and that. But at the end of the day, they end up on his dinner table. So can you say he really loves the cows? Does he really have a nice attitude towards the animals? No. So that's the difficulty.
That is actually demoniac nature.
Yeah. Because demoniac basically means not connected to the Lord. Right? So when it's not connected, then one's own desires and needs come up prominent. And so then it's always going to be a fight between yours and others. So the Vedic culture regulates those, but it doesn't mean that that itself means you don't have really the good qualities. You're using them to get done what you want to do.
Imitating.
Yeah, imitating. So that's the difficulty. So it may appear good, but if under the surface, then it may not be so good. But the point is even if they have, it's not really considered good unless it's connected to Krishna. So they may be really nice people, but still not connected to Krishna. Then when they die, then next life, can you guarantee they're going to be nice? So therefore, then you can't say they are nice people, because next life they're not. So how can you say they were? You know, like let's say you met somebody the first time, they were really nice, and then you meet them again a few weeks later and they just completely ignore you. Now you're going to say, yeah, really nice people. No. Right, but let's say you met them last week and they were a bit indifferent, and you meet them this week and then they're nice. What are you going to say?
He's
they're nice people. They're okay. You're not going to say, well, hey, last week. No, no, but they're nice now. You know what I'm saying? So the point is even if they do have good qualities from doing good work, still it doesn't last. But the devotee has the quality that lasts because it's connected to Krishna. Krishna's eternal, so therefore that manifestation of that quality will be eternal. Okay, so it will end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanand.